Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and as usual, I am your host, Doug McBurney, joined in studio by my extremely attractive audio engineer, welcoming you this week to listen to the mellow sounds of the Worldview. Because I was out at a trade show and I kind of blew out my pipes. So the vocal cords are languishing right now. But we're going to get through this. Welcome to a special midweek edition of the Worldview, as promised to my millions and millions of listeners out there. I know you've been on the edge of your seat waiting, wondering, when will he return? Well, we're back, and we're glad to have you aboard. Here on the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, and we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And I have to warn my extremely attractive audio engineer that right out of the gate, I've got a pile, I mean a pile, of homo stories. I don't know how. I know. Well, I wanted to try to put it gently, but anyway. Yes, I know. Yes, the plural for homos. Yes. The collective pronoun, I think. Yes. A herd of cattle, a school of fish, a pile of homos, and in this case, a pile of homo stories. But where to start? Where to start? Oh, I can punctuate these stories with some good news. I'm going to set this one article of good news aside here, so that if we get depressed at any time during the show, we can just interject some good news. We can wedge it in between all these homos that are piled up here in my stack of stories here in front of me. We begin with the O.J. Simpson case. Now, I was out on the road last week, which was the, was it last week or week before? I guess the anniversary of the O.J. Simpson story goes on for about a year and a half. But the murder happened, well, about, gosh, was it 20 years ago? 20 years ago? My goodness, 20 years ago this month, anyway. And I wanted to do a story related to the O.J. Simpson case, seeing as I was involved to a certain degree. You know, just Google it, O.J. Simpson, Doug McBurney. You'll see. No, I wasn't involved in the murder. No, I wasn't involved in the cover-up. I wasn't involved with getting O.J. off, helping him get away with murder. I was involved after the fact, years and years after. But you can check that out online if you'd want. So I was perusing the internet for O.J. Simpson-related stories, and wouldn't you know it, some homos piled on. Yes, I have a story here from Los Angeles. I don't know where I got this story. I neglected to, KPCC, Southern California Radio. Dirk Vall and Bob Turr. You may remember them. They were helicopter pilots in Los Angeles. And on June 17th, 1994, they were the first two to broadcast above O.J. Simpson's white Bronco in Los Angeles during the infamous slow-speed chase. Well, they were rivals back then, you know, competing helicopter reporters, radio and TV. But now they're good friends. KPCC reports that the two male TV helicopter pilots were once fierce rivals fighting over airspace during landmark Southern California moments like O.J.'s slow-speed chase in 1994. You read that sentence and you think, two male TV helicopter pilots. Why would you point out that they're male? I mean, most TV helicopter pilots are male. Seems to go without saying. Well, KPCC reports that 20 years later, the two pilots have become friends, and they've become females. What are the odds? Dirk is now Dana, and Bob is now Zoe, after beginning hormone therapy last year. Hormone therapy. To do the whole transgendered thing. Now, for the rest of the article, the reporters refer to the men as she or her, So even though they've just begun their hormone therapy, the reporters are already reporting them as she's. This gets confusing. They're already reporting throughout the whole story. They call her and she and all this. Anyway, they apparently became close, and they have bonded over their transgender change process. No report in the article if they're dating, which is possible, I suppose. Seeing as this happened, what are the odds that the two helicopter pilots who filmed the slow-speed chase would end up trannies and friends? They could be dating. It's possible that these two men may have become or are becoming lesbians. It's very confusing, but it is possible. I guess the odds are getting greater and greater that things like this would happen, seeing as a society, we've decided to, well, become obsessed with and tolerate and even celebrate deviant sex. President Obama, as a matter of fact, in a WorldNet Daily article from about 10 days ago, says that he's appointed more homosexual judges than anyone else ever in history. That's right. He's got a whole list of homo judges that he's just ready to start appointing to the federal bench. And WorldNet Daily reports that these homosexual judges are sure to work to implement Barack Obama's agenda. Yeah. Let's see. Just recently, two federal judges garnered U.S. Senate confirmation. Yeah, Darren Giles, he received a vote of 98-0. Yeah. And then another lesbian, she got on 52-44. So apparently some Republicans were uncomfortable with the lesbian. But the flaming homosexual, he 98-0. They all voted for him, except maybe two were out on the golf course or, I don't know, hungover, strung out. They couldn't make it. I don't know what senators do these days. Let's see. This Darren Giles, is it? Gales, I'm sorry. Darren Gales. No, his name's still Garen. He hasn't changed it to Gale yet. It's his last name is Gales. Darren Gales, on top of being an openly homosexual federal judge, also claims the honor of being the first openly homosexual black man to be confirmed to the federal bench, winning the trifecta. That's right, he's a liberal, he's a homo, and he's black. You can't criticize this guy for anything, ever. Let's see now, the dyke that was approved by the Senate is the second black lesbian federal judge, but she is the first in almost 20 years, so she's got that going for her. Let's see, Senator Dick Durbin had some commentary. He says, never before in the course of the history of our state has there been an Article III federal judge who is openly a member of the LGBTQ community. It's another important milestone in America's journey, says Dictor. Another milestone. Now, he says it's our journey toward equality and opportunity. I say it's our slouch toward Gomorrah. That's where I would classify. Let's see. Obama was even at a fundraiser a week before last where he bragged. He says, before I took office, only one openly gay judge had ever been confirmed in history. And we now have 10 more. 10. And the crowd went wild. You could hear the hissing and the lisping. It sounded like gas escaping at the back of the room. They had to call in the fire department. Obama, by the way, WorldNet Daily, for some reason, notes in the final sentence of the article that Barry has also appointed more Asian American judges than all presidents combined, for whatever that's worth. Yeah, I wouldn't be happy were I an Asian judge to be lumped in with the queers. But I think that's a bonus these days. To be lumped in with the queers is actually a term of endearment now, especially in Washington, where the obsession continues. As a matter of fact, let's go to some foreign policy news from the Culture File. From the Associated Press, I'm sorry, from Reuters, I don't want to get the two confused, Reuters has not begun the transition period to become the AP yet. Nor has AP begun hormone therapy to try to become Reuters, although that could be in the offing. Dateline Washington from the Reuters Wire, the United States has cut aid to Uganda and imposed visa restrictions and canceled a regional military exercise in response to a Ugandan law that imposes harsh penalties for the crime of homosexuality. So in the face of global catastrophe in foreign policy, a universal catastrophic failures of foreign policy from the Crimea to Ukraine to Iran to Pakistan to all points in between, the United States government remains obsessed with deviant sex. That's all they care about. According to Reuters, Western donors, Uganda, that's an African country. And of course, most of Africa, if not all of Africa, is on some form of welfare from the West. And so the countries that support the destruction of African countries via welfare are called donors. These are the donor countries. That's you and I. We're contributing to the delinquency of an African nation. Western donors, including the United States, have halted or redirected over $100 million in aid to the East African nation's economy there in Uganda because Uganda passed a law against homosexuality. Well, that's good. Maybe they can get off welfare. At least they realize that homosexuality is criminal. And now if they could just get off welfare, Uganda could be well on their way to being normal. Yes. Did he say normal? I said normal, and I meant to offend. Yes. As a matter of fact, I did. Now, let's move on to some news from the government schools. Reason number 782 to get or keep your children out of the government schools is from KDVR Dateline Denver. House Speaker Mark Ferrandino has taken a job with the Denver Public Schools as the CFO. Why is that news? Why would that qualify as reason number 782? Well, it's because Mark Ferrandino is the first openly, flagrantly flaming homosexual lawmaker. First openly, flagrantly flaming Speaker of the House in the Colorado legislature, or he was. He plans to resign soon, and he will go to work for the government schools, the Denver Public Schools, as the CFO. Ferrandino is known around the Capitol here in Denver as the prime sponsor of legislation recognizing homosexual unions, that which passed back in 2013, leading Colorado on our journey toward Gomorrah, or maybe Sodom, whichever one was worse, that's where Colorado's headed. And KDVR goes on to report that as CFO at Denver Public Schools, Ferrandino will oversee the district's annual budget of more than $800 million, and he gets to have influence on Denver's children, which is really what he's all about. He really likes to think about and to be involved with Denver's children at the Denver Public Schools. There it is. Reason number 782 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. We move on to reason number 780. These are in no particular order. This is reason number 8 in England, but it's reason number 780 here in the United States. Dateline Swansea, England. Swansea or Swanley? Well, they say Swanley. Well, we'll go with Swanley then, since that's what EAG News reports. Parents of students at Crockenhill Primary School in Kent, England, are fuming over a school-sanctioned pole dancing demonstration that featured performers as young as 4 years old. Yes. Officials contend that the pole dancing routine, which also featured Disney music from movies like Frozen and the Lion King, was perfectly acceptable. I'm not sure what all the fuss is about. Well, we have a school official was asked about it, and he said, it's great for the children, it helps them keep fit, and there's nothing sleazy about pole dancing at all. Now, one of the little girls that was performing in the pole dancing exercise was wearing a crop top with one of the shoulder sleeves missing, and one parent reported that the shorts that the little girls were wearing showed more than they should. One parent was quoted as saying, "I felt like I was entering something quite unsavory." Yeah, that's a 4-year-old girl's pole dancing. Reason number 780 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. Should we be surprised that the administrators find that the program was completely fine, perfectly acceptable? And they say there's nothing sleazy about it at all. These are the administrators who are in charge of the future of the British Empire. And certainly, the British Empire, well, it ain't what it once was. But I know about one thing I got to do. Ram it all. And now the time is now. Sing my song. I'm going round the world and I found my girl on my way. I've been this way 10 years to the day. Ram it all. Try the cream of all my dreams. Got no time for spinning. The time has come to be gone. I want to thank my extremely attractive audio host for that very British bumper. Thank you so much. Yes. I wonder if the boys in Led Zeppelin would have a problem with their daughters pole dancing at school. I think they probably would. They're a lot older now. I guess I would have to ask about their grandchildren, I think. They'd have a problem with their grandchildren. All right, so that's all of this news about the deviants and the perverts causes me to want to interject something uplifting. And for that, we go to the Justice File from CNN. They report that John Ruth L. Henry, 63 years old, was declared dead at 7:43 p.m. on Wednesday, June 18th. At the Florida State Prison in Starkey, a media witness was inside the prison when Mr. Henry was executed, yes, by lethal injection. Henry fatally stabbed his wife and her 5-year-old son from a previous marriage in 1985 before I graduated high school myself. Yeah. But he was put to death by lethal injection. CNN's a little ruffled about the whole thing. They bring to mind the botched execution of an Oklahoma man back in April, at which point CNN and all the other leftists thought that all executions surely would be halted. But what they didn't realize was that at the end of the botched execution in Oklahoma, the intended target of the execution was dead. And so it wasn't as botched as everyone thought. And other states have carried forward with their duty to execute these murderers, even if it is 25 or 30 years too late. So there, a little bit of good news interjected. Now we get back to news of the transgendered. Yes, I apologize, but this is what it is. I'm sorry. When the media and the government are obsessed with deviant sex, then you end up with piles of stories about all these perverts. And so we go to the Bad Religion File. From the Associated Press in Washington, D.C., an openly transgender Episcopal priest is set to preach at America's National Cathedral in Washington. Now, I think this may have already happened because I was on the road, and I was even in Las Vegas, where one loses track of the days and the nights. Even if you're not drinking or partying or anything, I was just working. But one can lose track of the days and the weeks and the hours and the minutes and the months when one is in Las Vegas. And this may have already happened, but I do want to report on it because I think it is a milestone on America's journey towards Sodom. The Reverend Dr. Cameron Partridge, the Episcopal chaplain at Boston University, either will be or was a guest preacher at the National Cathedral. That's the National Cathedral, the cathedral that represents America. And I find this utterly appropriate, that the cathedral that carries the name of America would invite an openly, not just a homo, not just someone who sympathizes with homos, not just someone who thinks homo marriage is okay, not just someone who thinks that all the homos are equal and should just be left alone, but an openly transgendered, is there any other kind of transgendered than openly, right? I mean, I can always tell. Yeah, I can always tell when they are. And by the way, out in Las Vegas, not only are there more tattoos and facial piercings and the ear stretching grommet things, there's a name, the gauges, there's more and more of those, yes. But there's more and more just flaming homosexuals just walking around with their chin up in front of God and everybody as proud as all get out. They're multiplying exponentially out in Las Vegas. It's become very uncomfortable even just to walk through a hotel out there without feeling like you need a shower and a penicillin shot when you get back to your room, for crying out loud. Anyway, the Right Reverend Partridge either will be or was the first openly transgendered priest to preach from the Canterbury pulpit at America's National Cathedral. The Right Reverend Gene Robinson, the first openly homosexual Episcopal bishop, will preside at the service appropriately. It's part of the cathedral's celebration of Pride Month. Yeah, Pride Month. That's the whole month of June is Pride Month with the homos. Yeah, so they usually have their homo pride parade here in Denver. They have that on Father's Day. And they take the whole month of June, which is traditionally when people get married. I mean, normal people, men and women, get married in June. My extremely attractive audio engineer and I, as a matter of fact, we got married in June in Las Vegas, as a matter of fact. Yes, and the building where we got married has been turned into a museum. Yeah, that's how big of a deal it is. Yeah, Doug was married here to his extremely attractive audio engineer. There's a big plaque. Well, actually, they don't mention our particular nuptials, but they did take place at the former Clark County Courthouse there in Las Vegas over 20 years ago, as a matter of fact. But where was I going with that? Oh, let's get back to the American National Cathedral. The service includes readings and prayers from members of the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered community. And the very Reverend Gary Hall, Dean of the Cathedral, says he hopes that the tranny's appearance will, quote, send a symbolic message in support of greater equality for the transgender community. I would just say to the very Reverend Gary, this isn't a symbolic message. This is an actual message from an actual tranny in the actual pulpit. Nothing symbolic about it. You got a homo and a tranny standing in your pulpit. That's a little bit more than symbolic. I wouldn't be surprised if symbolic lightning struck the place. Anyway, so there's our representation of America this week on her strange journey into darkness. There at the National Cathedral, right there in Washington, in front of God and everybody, a homo, a tranny, and a homo sympathizer, at the very least. They all three of them might end up married by the end of the sermon or whatever. What do they call it? Whatever they got. I don't know what they even call it, a sermon anymore. They have readings. Yeah, it's good. It's a service. They're going to preside over the service. Maybe they'll all get married at the end, and there you have it. Gomorrah's National Cathedral there in the nation's capital. It's a sad thing to watch. It's a sad thing to watch when a good and healthy nation descends into an obsession with deviant perversion and all of that. But we're watching it, and we're reporting on it here because I feel like you need to know. Now, let's go to Rick Perry. You remember a few weeks ago we reported that Rick Perry compared the homos to drunks. Yeah, he did. He equated queers and drunks. He said, you know, I might want to be a drunk, but I try not to do that. Just like the Right Reverend Gary and Cameron, you know, they might want to do whatever it is they've done to themselves. Maybe they could think about stopping as well. Or maybe they could ask God for help in not pursuing their sinful fleshly lusts. Seeing as they're right reverends and extremely reverent. No, I'm sorry, very reverent. Gary is very reverent. Gene is right reverend. And Dr. Cameron, the tranny, he's just a reverend. Probably because when you Once you transgender, it's like in the military when you start over. You know, you lose rank, I think. So he's just a reverend there. Anyway, Rick Perry compared homosexual behavior to alcoholism. I thought that was apt and appropriate. Although, I gotta say, it's not as bad being around a drunk as it is being around a queer on the make. I mean, that's hard to take. I mean, a drunk, you know, you guy standing at the off-ramp at the freeway, you know what he wants. He wants a couple of bucks so he can get a 40-ounce bottle of beer. But, you know, a queer crawls into your car at the same off-ramp, and, well, I mean, you just don't know what might happen. Anyway, CNN reports that Governor Rick Perry recently compared homosexuality to alcoholism. And he was at an event last Thursday sponsored by the Christian Science Monitor and appeared on C-SPAN. And when asked about his apt comparison, Governor Rick Perry said, "Well, I stepped right in it. I stepped right in it." He stepped in it, he says. Now, there's a lot of material there if I wanted to, you know, go down in the gutter. But we're going to leave that aside. Now, CNN says that Rick Perry, governor of Texas, didn't necessarily distance himself from the comments, and he didn't necessarily apologize for it, but he said he'd rather be talking about other issues. And he can't talk about other issues because he talked about one of the top three most important issues in the nation today. Yes, that's right. I said it. The homosexualization of the government, the media, the judiciary, the culture, entertainment, the homosexualization of the culture is one of the top couple stories. Right below the legalized murder of innocent people and the impending end of religious liberty in America. Right after that is the homosexualization of everything. Top three. And so Rick opened his mouth about it. Now he says he'd really like to talk about the economy. He says, whether you're gay or straight, you need to be having a job. And those are the focuses that I want to be involved with. Okay, well, you know what, Rick? Then just get out. If you don't understand that the fundamental issues that are causing the economic problems in our country, one of them is this obsession with deviant sex. Because if you're gonna allow and celebrate things like, well, I mean, what they do, I don't really want to get into it, but if that's going to be your standard, it's kind of hard to tell the people in the government not to steal all the money and not to spend like drunken sailors, profligates. I mean, you're already celebrating some of the most perverted and disgusting acts in all of history. And now Rick Perry wants to work on the window dressing of economic activity? I just don't. I don't think you're qualified. Rick closed by saying, these issues need to be decided at the state level. Well, that's just, get out, Rick. Get out. Rick Perry will never be president because he may be dumber than George W. Bush. And that's saying something. George W. Bush, the dumbest man to ever occupy the White House. And Rick Perry is like his stupid little brother. How embarrassing is that? All right, now, let's see. We continue into the bad religion file. Oh, my goodness, from Detroit, the Associated Press. The Presbyterian Assembly, top legislative body of the Presbyterian Church, USA, has voted by a large margin to recognize homosexual marriage as Christian marriage. Yeah, they added language to whatever it is they have there written down. That marriage can be the union of two people and not just a man and a woman. Yeah, they've added that. Wait a minute. Presbyterian. Now, the National Cathedral, let's go back to that. They were Episcopal. So we got the Presbyterians trying to slide in underneath the Episcopal. Well, wait a second here. What's worse? To have a tranny in the pulpit preaching about perverted sex? Or is it worse to vote that homosexuals who get married are participating in a Christian institution? I don't know which denomination belongs beneath which, but I can tell you what, they're both in a race to the bottom. It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. The guitar lick that inspired 10,000 teenagers to pick up the guitar. Get off the stage, boys. We got to get back to the show. Now, I want to apologize if I caused anyone out there to have to visualize which denomination belongs under which, because, you know, that can be disturbing when you're talking about this type of stories. But the Presbyterians, on their way straight to hell with jet rockets, Bill Norton of the Presbytery de Cristo, which covers parts of Arizona and New Mexico, oh, he didn't immediately accede to this idea that the Presbyterians would declare homosexual marriages as Christian marriages. And he said he urged the assembly to delay any changes. Please, just stop. Wait. We're going to repeal some of the Ten Commandments? Well, maybe we should delay some. Well, I don't know, Bill. That's pretty weak. Bill says we're laying hands on something that is holy, that God has given us. So we need to be sure any changes we make are in accord with God's will revealed in Scripture. Well, that's actually fairly clear thinking by Brother Bill of the Presbytery de Cristo. I would refer him to Romans, the 10th chapter. I mean, and then we wouldn't even have to vote. Where did these people get the idea that they had the right to vote on God's eternal decrees against immorality? Which, I mean, that's what this, all this deviant sex and perversion, homosexuality, it's just, it's immorality. It's very clear in the Bible, if you read the whole book, God doesn't like immorality. He won't tolerate immorality. In fact, that's why he made hell, was for immoral people who will not repent of their immorality. People like the Presbyterian Church. One of the mainline Protestant denominations, only the United Church of Christ supports gay marriage outright, says the AP. The Episcopal Church has approved a prayer service to bless same-sex unions. The Evangelical Lutheran Church in America has eliminated barriers for homosexual clergy, but allows local churches to make their own, decide on their own policies. Now, the largest mainline, allegedly Christian, Protestant denomination, the United Methodist Church, bars ordaining people who are involved in homosexual relationships. However, that's a big however with the United Methodist. However, church members have been debating whether to split over their different views of the Bible and marriage. Gay marriage supporters have been recruiting clergy to openly officiate at homo ceremonies in protest of church policy. And so the Catholic Church, well, we know what happened to them, for crying out loud. Speaking of deviant perversion, I mean, they were just awash in it, and it still are, I'm sure. Caught up in a wash in it. The mainline, the mainline Protestant denominations seem to be sliding as fast as they can over the rim of hell, over the lip, down into the funnel, swirling toward that sucking black eddy into hell. So who's left? Well, the fundamentalists. And there aren't that many of us, frankly. We have small churches, and we stick to the fundamentals of the Bible. And one of the fundamentals is God does not like immorality. He doesn't recommend it. He doesn't tolerate it. He doesn't teach it. And he certainly doesn't want it celebrated in the pulpits of his church. I think that comes across clearly in the Bible. But apparently, it's not as clear as it used to be to many religious leaders. All right. Now, before we get to more of the Presbyterians, for crying out loud, let's a little more good news, ladies and gentlemen. What have I done with my story that had the good news? I gotta go back through this pile here in order to find... I had another execution. Yeah, I know. Well, that's what qualifies as good news here on the Weekly Worldview. Well, I seem to have lost the story. That's kind of... There it is. Okay, in Georgia. The fine state of Georgia, Marcus A. Wellens, a 59-year-old criminal, was declared dead at 11:56 p.m., Tuesday, June 17th, he was executed duly by the state of Georgia, having been convicted of a capital crime. He was convicted in 1993 of raping and killing India Roberts, a 15-year-old girl, just outside of Atlanta, Georgia. And he has finally been put to death over 20 years after he murdered that young girl. And while it was justice delayed, we will celebrate, because the righteous rejoice when they see the vengeance. And Mr. Wellens certainly deserved to be executed. And we're glad that he was. Now, more from the Presbyterian Church in the Bad Religion, Bad Politics file. From Detroit, the Associated Press reports that the Presbyterian Church USA became the most prominent religious group in the United States to endorse divestment as a protest against Israeli policies toward the Palestinians. So on the heels of the Presbyterians deciding that homosexual marriages are Christian marriages, they also decided to divest themselves of Israel. A moderator for the church meeting said immediately after the vote, they said, "This in no way is a reflection of our lack of love for our Jewish brothers and sisters." He said, yes, that's Heath Rada, a moderator for the church. This doesn't reflect our lack of love for our Jewish brothers and sisters. No, this is all about our hatred of God, is how he should have finished that sentence. But anyway, so have you noticed that the perverts and the deviants and the criminals and the thieves and the terrorists, they all hate Israel. And it's not really so much about the Jews. I mean, they're just like everybody else. You got good Jews, you got annoying Jews, you got really friendly Jews, you got nice Jews, you got crooked Jews, lying Jews, lousy Jews. There's all kinds of Jews. They're just like every other. They're just like the Irish, except they drink less. But they're just like everybody else. This is really about people's hatred of the living God, the creator of the universe, who has declared that he shall be the judge of all the earth. But he's made that declaration not with a closed fist, but an open hand, because he does offer to be the salvation of those who stand under judgment. And those who will not acknowledge their sin, well, they just hate that. They hate it. And so they hate the Jews, and they hate Israel. But they really hate God. That's what it's really all about. Now, speaking of, I just lumped the terrorists in with the liberals, didn't I? Yes. Well, listen to this. There's been an interesting confluence between terrorism and liberalism as of late in the release of known terrorists, enemies of the state, enemy combatants. Yes, the Barry and Kerry show recently released from Guantanamo. Known killers with American blood on their hands. They traded him for Bo Bergdahl, likely a deserter, certainly not a hero. I do have a story on a hero coming up, by the way. I've said on many occasions they're not all heroes, and you don't necessarily have to look to the military to find heroes, and we'll get to that in a moment. But first, the confluence of terrorism and liberalism. A senior Israel Defense Force official is reported to have said that the kidnapping of three Israeli teenagers, one of whom is an American citizen, was apparently planned by Palestinian terrorists who had recently been freed from Israeli prisons. Yes, according to this report from Breitbart, Israel has reluctantly carried out the release of dozens of convicted Palestinian terrorists at the behest of the Barry and Kerry show. Yes, President Obama and the Secretary of State, who they saw the releases of these convicted Palestinian terrorists as confidence-building measures that would entice the Palestinian Authority to the negotiating table. Well, the releases stopped when the Israelis realized that the Palestinians had no intention of negotiating, and now it's highly likely that some of these released prisoners, released at the behest of the liberals, Barry and Kerry, maybe they have kidnapped these three Israeli teenagers, one of them being an American. Well, there you have it, the confluence between liberals and terrorists. Liberals and terrorists are on the same side. Terrorists just have more motivation, I guess. They're more brazen. They're more brash. They're more straightforward about their desire to kill people. Liberals want to do it on the installment plan by corrupting the minds of the youth and watching the youth destroy themselves while being molested and taken advantage of by the liberals who corrupted them. The terrorists, on the other hand, they just blow people up and cut people's heads off. Well, anything else here from Breitbart? Oh, John Kerry issued a strong condemnation of the kidnappings. However, he made no comment of the link between the releases of Palestinian terrorists and the kidnappings. As far as I know, it's been, almost 2 weeks since these teenagers were kidnapped? I haven't heard a peep from the State Department about the fact that one of these kids is an American. Anyway, very disturbing. The confluence of the liberals and the terrorists are a threat to us all. They're children, suicidal children, hell-bent on killing themselves and taking as many people as they can with them. I know those are harsh words, but look around at the world. Look what's happening, folks. I think it's time for more than harsh words, frankly. Now, should I comment on the IRS scandal? The IRS scandal where they lost, what did Nixon lose? 19 minutes of tape, right? They've lost 2 years. 2 years of emails with Lois Lerner and a half a dozen other people. How could anybody believe that? How could they not have been arrested right there on the floor of the Congress in the hearing when they tried to say that? You can't get by with that. What, are you living in an alternate fantasy universe? Please. You lost all the emails for 2 years. Get out of here. Anyway, this could be the scandal that brings them down. I've said that. That's probably the 50th time over the past 5 years. This will be the one. Well, remember, in this one, Barry and his friends, they haven't actually killed people. They've actually gotten people killed in the other scandals, and that hasn't taken them down. And if the Republicans didn't have the stones to introduce articles of impeachment immediately, or at least arrest Lois Lerner and whoever it was who claims they threw away her hard drive, if you haven't had them arrested, folks, don't get your hopes up that the IRS scandal is going to be the one to save us from the Barry and Kerry show. I'm not sure it's going to happen. It's as if the government is The governing officials are pre-programmed to do things to destroy the country. It's as if they don't have their own free will. Which brings me to this article from The Independent in London. They say free will could be an illusion. An illusion, I said, a result of background noise in the brain. Yeah. The Independent reports that it's previously been suggested that our perceived ability to make autonomous choices is an illusion. And now scientists in California have found that free will may actually be the result of electrical activity within the brain. According to the research, decisions could be predicted based on the pattern of brain activity immediately before a choice was made. The volunteers in the study, they knew they were going to make a choice, and this electrical activity could predict the likely outcome of the decision. Desires and goals drive our decisions in a linear cause and effect kind of way. One of the scientists said. He says, our findings show that our decisions are also influenced by neural noise within any given moment. And so the idea that we have free will and that we're actually responsible for anything that we do, it eludes liberals. It eludes terrorists. And these scientists are trying to sell it, and they'll probably go a long way. They'll probably receive additional funding so that the perverts and the deviants in the government and in the education infrastructure can absolve themselves of their many, many sins. Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. These scientists and the government and the research infrastructure, well, they're not actually going to be able to absolve themselves of their sins. They're just trying to convince themselves that they're not responsible for anything. And it's just not true. This is all real. and the decisions you make, you are responsible for. And I thought that came across fairly clearly in the Bible, at least from my reading of it. Yeah, that's why there's hell. That's why God is justified casting people into hell for eternity. It's because they're actually responsible. But of course, these people don't believe in God. Folks who did this study, should I give them proper credit here? Science is from the Center for Mind and Brain at the University of California, Davis. Yes. Published in the Journal of Cognitive Neuroscience. You know, one good thing about blowing out your voice, working the booth at the trade shows out there in Las Vegas, is that you can really hit those low, low, low vibrations on the radio. Come across with the deep radio voice. All right. Now, so we move on. That was the science, really? File. Yeah. Because we're not buying it. Now, from the Heroes file, Breitbart reports that a pregnant mother who found out she had a malignant tumor in her eye faced some harsh choices. She had had cancer before, but she had gone into remission for about 5 years, so she and her husband thought they were safe. And they started trying to have a baby, but only 2 weeks after discovering she was pregnant, Chantelle Gaultier-Valancourt of Edmonton, Canada, found out that the tumor had returned, and it had returned with a vengeance. It was now a malignant melanoma in her right eye, and she was told that the melanoma could spread to her bones, to her liver. And 8 weeks into her pregnancy, she was faced with some really hard decisions. She could undergo radiation therapy to save her vision and lose the baby. Or she could wait for months to go by until her fetus would be strong enough for her to have her eye removed and forego any treatment that could harm her baby before that, but she would also lose her eye. The doctors also warned her that if she waited, the cancer could spread to her baby. And if she waited too long to have the eye removed, the cancer might spread to both eyes. Wow. Well, instead of having radiation therapy to save her sight, ultimately, the couple decided to wait until 28 weeks into the pregnancy, until the baby was strong enough for the mother to be anesthetized, at which point she would voluntarily consent to the removal of her cancerous eye and let her baby live. Now, I'm certain that the pro-aborts and the feminists, they would decry this decision. And they would point to this as one of the reasons we should be allowed to kill these fetuses that are feeding on the bodies of these poor women. But for me, as for me in my house, this woman is the kind of example I want to teach my daughters about. This is a hero. This is love. There's no greater love than if a person would lay down their life for a friend. And that's what this mother has volunteered to do. At this reporting in the Breitbart story, the surgery hadn't taken place yet. And then the couple wanted to have some privacy about it all. And I can appreciate that. But I'm really glad that they told their story. Because that's a hero. And that's the kind of woman that every young girl in America should learn about. They shouldn't be getting lectures from Sandra Fluck. They should hear from Chantelle Gaultier-Valancourt and her husband. Because that's what love is all about. And that's what being a real woman is all about. It's just what being a human being is about. A hero. Meanwhile, this story is not heroic, but it is shocking. It's from the Express in London. It's about China's one-child policy. Hundreds of millions of unborn children have lost their lives. Did you hear that? Hundreds of millions of children have lost their lives due to China's one-child policy. Tens of thousands of women have died, and tens of thousands more have committed suicide. that this is the story of Wang Guangrong, 37-year-old Chinese father of four. He had long been persecuted by the Chinese government, local officials, for daring to flout China's restrictions against multiple children. He had been subjected to heavy fines, he had had his livestock confiscated, and his children were declared by the Chinese government to be non-persons. Well, Wang sought to have his children, three daughters and one son, enrolled in the local school so that they could get an education. Well, officials insisted that Wang pay another round of heavy fines, but the family was already destitute due to the fines that had been levied against them in the past. Well, public suicide in China in protest of official wrongdoing has a long history. In Asia in general, but China specifically. So Wang slit his wrists and killed himself in front of the government building where the fines were being levied from. And when the domestic and international press picked up on the story, local government officials were quick to engage in damage control. They promised to compensate his widow. They even pledged to build a new house for her and the children. But millions of other children of the shadows. In China, they're called black children. These are children that the government has declared non-persons. Well, millions of other children, black children, as they're called in China, have not been nearly as lucky. They've been abandoned by the Chinese state. They've been positively ostracized by the government, which refuses to feed, house, clothe, or educate these lost children in any way. Their only crime is that they were born without official permission in a state where birth permits are mandatory. In China, having multiple children makes you and your black children enemies of the state, reports The Express from England. China's bachelor population, by the way, has already numbers in the tens of millions, while its population of elderly is also in the tens of millions. There's a shortage of women, and people are literally being driven to suicide. This is the one-child policy that was sold to China by who? By the West, by America and Margaret Sanger and Planned Parenthood, and administered by the likes of the United Nations and Bill and Melinda Gates. They help administer this policy from right here in America. Hundreds of millions. I dare say that the death toll since abortion laws were liberalized in the 1960s, I dare to say that the death toll could well be approaching, if not surpassed, a billion innocent people. More than every war and every atrocity in the history of man. And surely a righteous and loving God will not restrain his judgment much longer upon the people who have slaughtered his children. So that's China. Just awful. But there's a bright light and there's some good news in China. Last week, members of the Guangtao Church in Wenzhou, that's the city known as China's Jerusalem, successfully forced demolition teams to abandon their attempt to remove the cross from their church. However, demolition workers returned in the early morning hours to complete their task and rip the cross off the top of the church. This demolition, it is said by local people, is part of a renewed Communist Party crackdown on the Christian faith that began earlier this year. Around 360 church buildings and crosses have been demolished this year alone, according to a Christian group there in China. And so I said this is a bright light, this is an encouraging story. Why is this encouraging? Because the Chinese atheist communist officials are obviously afraid of something. And the frequency and intensity of their attacks on Christian institutions leads me to believe that perhaps their fears are well placed. That Christianity, which has been percolating beneath the surface in China for a generation or more, threatens them. And could boil over at any moment and engulf and destroy their government, which would be a tremendous blessing. And so I'm not all that sad that these churches are demolished or destroyed or crosses are ripped down, because those are just bricks and steel and mortar, and they're meaningless. They're just buildings. What I'm encouraged by here is the fear that I sense in the hearts of the atheists who have murdered China. They have murdered the equivalent of 10 nations in China. And they're obviously afraid. And I think it's our Christian brothers and sisters there in China who really know what it's all about. They're not voting on whether or not to ordain queers in the Chinese church, and they're not marrying off homosexuals to one another. And they're not molesting boys in the rectory in the Chinese church. They're on their knees praying to God in desperation for liberation. And while God might see the wickedness of the Presbytery and the Episcopals, the United Methodists, he may only look in on that occasionally. But he's listening intently to the Chinese Christians who are on their knees in desperation. He hears every word from them. All right, now, let's come back to America. Speaking of atheistic leaders who should be afraid, talk about Hillary Clinton. Last week on Bob Inyard's show, we rolled some tape of an old interview with Hillary. I'm sure you've heard the story where she chuckles and laughs about getting a rapist off. Well, the woman who was raped as a 12-year-old in Arkansas is speaking out. She spoke with an online news outlet. This was reported at the Daily Beast. She says Hillary smeared her and used dishonest tactics to successfully get her rapist off with a light sentence. It was Clinton's first criminal defense case as a 27-year-old lawyer. And the 12-year-old rape victim, who is now 52, says she now wants to speak out. She's been disturbed by what's been in the news. In an emotional interview, she accused Hillary Clinton of intentionally lying about her in court documents, going to extraordinary lengths to discredit evidence of the rape, and later callously acknowledging and laughing about her attacker's guilt on the recordings that we all heard just a couple weeks ago. She says, Hillary Clinton took me through hell. The victim's allegation that Clinton smeared her is based on a 1975 court affidavit written by Clinton on behalf of the rapist, Thomas Taylor, one of the two alleged rapists, whom Clinton agreed to defend after being asked by the prosecutor. See, the rapist had specifically requested a female attorney, and so Clinton said, okay, I'll take it. Clinton wrote in the affidavit, she said, I've been informed that the complainant is emotionally unstable with a tendency to seek out older men and engage in fantasizing. I have also been informed that she has, in the past, made false accusations about persons claiming they had attacked her body. Also, that she exhibits an unusual stubbornness and temper when she does not get her way. Clinton also wrote that a child psychologist told her that children in early adolescence tend to exaggerate and romanticize sexual experiences, especially when they come from disorganized families, such as the family of the complainant, the rape victim. I haven't heard much reportage on this. I hope this young lady has the intestinal fortitude to actually go on television. So the victim says she was a virgin before the assault. She spent 5 days after the rape in a coma. She spent months recovering from the beating that accompanied her rape and over 10 years in therapy. The doctors told her she would probably never be able to have children. Now 52 years old, the victim has never married, has never had children, has struggled with drug and alcohol problems, and she remains unemployed and living on disability assistance, a direct result of Hillary Clinton's early war on women. Hillary Clinton was making war on women before it was even cool. She's the original war on women. Now we move to reason number 781, to keep or get your kids out of the government school. A teacher, a married math teacher, 36 years old, was caught hiding under the bed of one of his students, a teenage girl, when the girl's mother came home unexpectedly. That's right. Her mother ordered the defendant to get out from under the bed and recognize him as a teacher from school. Anyway, he was given a 14-month jail term, suspended for 2 years, and ordered to do 200 hours of community service. Now, this is in England. Reason number 7 in England. Reason number 781. 200 hours of community service. He'll probably volunteer down at the junior high school, and he'll probably be given that, for crying out loud. All right. It's just ridiculous. It's outrageous. How anyone could continue to send their kids to the government school is absolutely beyond me. I cannot understand it. All right. Now, let's go to the justice file, if we can find any. From San Diego, as reported by Breitbart, Francisco Canseco was arrested on 5 felony counts of vandalism this past month. He's a graffiti artist down there in San Diego. He was in court during a hearing on previous charges of graffiti vandalism when he applied fresh graffiti to the same courthouse at which he was being held. I know, you can't make this up. Yeah. Let's see here. San Diego authorities used a graffiti tracking system to check on related vandalism and found that Canseco had been arrested by San Diego police in connection with at least 60 other instances of graffiti vandalism. First of all, what's a graffiti tracking system? And why do we need one? Doesn't anyone in San Diego have a belt? Crying out loud. Anyway, Canseco was rearrested after spray painting the courthouse, and he must now appear in court again. As if, how ridiculous is this? How much do you think him and his friends want to tag that courthouse again? Yeah. Well, that's what happens when the justice system deals in corruption and injustice. It encourages and inflames the heart of the wicked to do even more wickedness. Finally, ladies and gentlemen, from the culture file, Greenville Online. In March, Chase Culpepper was told at the South Carolina DMV office that he could not have his photo taken with women's makeup on. Yeah, that's right. Well, certain lawyers now say that violates his free speech rights. Yes, Michael Silverman, the executive director of the defense fund for this little pervert, says Chase's freedom to express his gender should not be restricted by DMV staff. He's entitled to be who he is and express that without interference from government actors. Well, the police say that the reason we take photos is so we can identify people. And if he's a boy and he takes a picture and he looks like a girl, well, that can be confusing for police. Hello? All right. We've obviously gone around the bend. And that's all we've got here at The Worldview, ladies and gentlemen. I want to thank my friends at KGOV, at Denver Bible Church, at AmericanRightToLife.com, my other brother Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the weekly Worldview studio. Should the Lord tarry, I will return. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.